Hi people, and hello my Chili Con Carnage crew. It's Chili here from Live Listen Erased, and I'm here with a special episode of Live Listen Erased. This one is going to be very interesting because I have Brendan here from All This Filth. Brendan, so good to have you on the show.
Hey Chili man, thanks for having me. It's it's going to be an interesting show. It's glad to be here.
Yeah, I'm so pleased to be bringing this back again because it's been too long since we've had this, you know, and to have a special guest such as yourself on here, I'm just pleased to be bringing this back to it. And of course, Australia, hell yeah. So yeah, that's the main thing as well. Now, for those who are unaware of the show and how this operates, Live Listen Erased is basically me selecting three albums, and you have the choice. You have the choice to erase an album forever. You have a choice to listen to an album forever, but never see that album live, or the band rather. And of course, live, where you get to see this album performed in its entirety live once only and can never listen to it again. So this is some tough choices to be made, especially Brendan, because we've been chatting a bit off screen as well a few weeks ago. You had your album drop as well. I should mention Brendan is a member of All This Filth, a fantastic band. But you gave me some interesting choices as well with your messages that we were talking about before. So there are some interesting things as well coming up. And I've got to say, these three that I've picked for you, I hope they're very difficult for you.
It's going to be, because I think the list that I gave you, I remember you told me like, oh, you know, narrow it down to three. And I was like, here's like 10. Like, I mean, like, you know, like, there's so many albums that are important to me and so many great bands that have influenced me throughout the years. So firstly, to narrow that down to three, and I don't know the three yet. I don't know the three you've chosen, but to narrow that down to three and then to choose the in that format, it's going to be really interesting and difficult. So yeah, bring it on. Let's do this.
Let's do this. He's up for the challenge, everyone. So without further ado, the list is upon us. And for you, Brendan, I have the following. Slipknot's self-titled album, the debut, sorry, I should say. Fear Factory, Obsolete. And Nailbomb's Point Blank. The three. If that was a... that's going to be made into a short. Three very difficult options here because there is some damn impressive records to be picking. And of course, these are, as you said, massive influences in your life from before. So where would you like to begin?
Let's start with the first one you mentioned, Slipknot self-titled. Of the three, that was probably the first one that I got into, just chronologically speaking. Just because of how old I am, the age and the time that it came out in the late 90s. I believe it was 98 or possibly 99. So I remember being introduced to this album the way that we used to back in the day. So I was in high school at the time. I think I was about 14, 15 years old. And a friend of mine, Paul, from school, came up to me. And we often had discussions like this. He'd come up and it was literally like something you'd see on like South Park or something. It's like, he's like, dude, have you heard of this band? They're called Slipknot. There's like 20 of them and they wear masks. One of them has a dildo on his face and they back each other on stage. And I was like, what? Where do I sign up? And it's obviously, you know, back then, like we had the internet, but you know, the internet isn't what it was, you know.
Yeah.
And you had the one computer in the house in like your brother's bedroom or whatever. So to get on the internet, you had to go into your brother's bedroom, you know, whatever. So the first thing I did, I remember hearing about this, I went down to the Sanity CD store, went to the metal section, which is like nothing like they are these days.
No.
Well, it's funny because they were small, then they got big, and now CD sections are small again because of, you know, CDs these days. So, I remember going to the Sanity. I remember picking up the album cover without sort of... Oh, no. I got online and I downloaded Wait and Bleed and Surfacing because they were the two most popular songs.
Yeah.
I downloaded them. And, of course, back then, dial-up, Took me about a day and a half to download one or two songs.
Yes.
Because every time someone would phone, you'd get disconnected from the internet. Yeah, that's how old I am, kids.
Listen yeah, up. The younger generation just don't get that. They're like, what, you had to share the phone with the internet? What's that?
yeah, what the hell are you talking about? Like, yeah, and like downloading a song a day, what are you talking about? So, I remember downloading those two songs and Wait and Bleed and Surfacing were the first two I remember hearing, and then like, you know, Eyeless as well.
Oh, yeah.
Which is great songs. And so I remember hearing this, you know, and I was already into sort of metal at that stage. I was listening to some Soulfly and,
oh yeah,
and bits and pieces, Rammstein, I was already big into and whatnot as well. So I was already, you know, they were sort of my gateway bands, and this was one of the big gateway bands for me, was Slipknot. You know how they talk about gateway drugs being marijuana? Slipknot was sort of my Slipknot's, marijuana.
I swear, Slipknot's like the metal community's marijuana.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, there's so many people that I know that have, that, you know, sort of, you know, they were curious about metal, and Slipknot just ushered them in, and through Slipknot, you end up finding other bands, you know, heavier things, and you know, your journey takes off from there, sort of thing.
Oh, yeah.
So they were that band. I remember going to Sanity, looking at this album cover, and sort of harping like, "What the fuck is going on there?" Because you just see these dudes. It's got the red cover.
Yeah,
they're all in the red jumpsuits. You know, got the dude with the dildo. I was like, "There's a guy with the dildo in the face." You know, like,
there's Dildo Man.
yeah, exactly. And I just remember, you know, unbeknownst to me at the time, the lead singer Corey Taylor with the mask, and he's got the dreadlocks going on and stuff. Oh, yeah. And I'm like, that just looks cool. And I remember being like, man, that just looks mental. Like, it's, you know, a little bit dangerous looking, you know what I mean? Like, you look, that's some mental asylum stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And I just remember thinking, cool. So I bought it, took it home that day. And I remember saying to people at the time, I was like, dude, this is the heaviest thing I've ever heard in my life. Which at the time...
It was!
At the time it was. I just remember thinking, there's no band heavier than this band. And like,
oh yeah,
which is funny looking back, you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You hear the, you know, tech death now, or, you know, slam or grind.
Oh yeah, like, yeah, there's, yeah, like...
not even close. But you know, back then I was like, holy shit. Like, you know, even though they had the catchier songs as well, I think that's why they are a bit of a gateway band, because you do have like the clean sung choruses.
That helps.
Yeah, which sort of eases your transition into the metal. But the thing that actually attracted me was the heaviness and the aggression, because I was just like, and the groove that got me, because it's visceral. You feel that rather than think about it. So, yeah, I think that's the album we'll talk about first, I think, because, yeah, chronologically that got me sort of into it. I mean, and it's probably my favorite Slipknot album to this day. I mean, Iowa's great. Wrong. Iowa is a great album as well. They're the two big ones. And, you know, since then, depending on your opinion, they've ebbed and flowed with it. I'm not going to slam them. I'm not going to say anything like negative, no. But I'm not a massive fan of the last album or two, I will say. But, you know, more power to them. It's their creative journey, and they can do what they want.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's artistic merit in what they're doing. So, you know. But yeah, that album, like, to this day, I, you know, still really love that album. So yeah,
there was one of the things I remember hearing about this, would have been years later, because what you're telling me right here is exactly the same as to what I had coming up with Slipknot, you know, heaviest band ever, gateway band 100%, and everyone's just thinking, oh my god, and you know, they moved on to black metal and all this stuff ever since. Yeah. But making Slipknot look like, you know, little toddlers in the field. But anyway, disregarding that for a moment, I remember there was Corey Taylor giving an interview sometime, and he was talking about back in the day, he was really nervous, you know, which seems so odd to now, but he was really nervous back in the day to doing live gigs, that his mask, he would actually put like tacks inside of it, so he'd put this mask on, feel the pain in his face to get that aggression going in him.
Wow.
It's a crazy story. I mean, half the thing I guess that made Slipknot as big as they are is also the visual imagery, which really helps the band. You know, they're demonic looking, you know. Yeah, a lot of metal bands just exist and they look like regular blokes and such, but then Slipknot comes along, nine dudes in a jumpsuit wearing masks. We don't know the IDs of them. The internet's in its infancy. probably better than it is now in Australia, but you know, it's there's this whole mysterium around the band, I guess. And yeah, that debut album, it got a lot of people that I knew that weren't metalheads intrigued on the band Slipknot, you know. And yeah, Wait and Bleed. Wow, that's the first Slipknot song I heard by them too. I, you know, yeah, it was definitely found that online somewhere and found its way onto a burnt CD sometime later on, but
definitely. Do you remember they had that? And here's a, like, this is gonna age me as well. Do you remember that VHS tape, Welcome to Our Neighborhood?
Oh, I never bought it, but I do remember it.
Yeah, so I had that. I remember going to one of the local record stores here. I think it was Dada Records, which is still open.
Wow. Thankfully.
And like, you know, it's an independent store, which is, you know, even better.
Nice.
Yeah, I remember finding on VHS back then, because like, you know, only rich people had DVD players back in the day.
Yeah.
Only the rich, you know, the rich kids at school, like with the parents who were doing well, like, you've got a DVD player. Whoa. So yeah, I had the VHS for Welcome to Our Neighborhood. And also there was a Roadrunner VHS I bought the same day, Drilling the Vein 3, which was one of those compilation VHSs, which had videos from a bunch of different Roadrunner bands.
Oh, yeah.
So you had like, you had a couple video clips from Slipknot, which ended up, they were on the Welcome to Our Neighborhood.
Mm.
And then you had like Typo Negative and a few other bands.
Probably would have been like Machine Head or something like
yes,
that.
Yes, Machine Head was on there. Stigression as well, because it was an Australian sort of release. So Stigression was actually on Dark Carnival Records, which was like owned by
ICP. Isn't that
No. Yes, I thought that too, but it's not. Like it's called Dark Carnival, but it was like this imprint that Roadrunner owned for Australia.
Oh.
Sort of. But like it, like that's the only thing I'd ever heard of it or some shit. And but either way, yeah, I used to think that as well. I was like, wait, are they ICP? But yeah, it's got nothing to do with ICP. I think they probably had to get rid of that because of the ICP thing.
Yeah.
But anyway. Yeah, I remember that VHS, Welcome to Our Neighborhood, and yeah, it was pretty cool. Actually, at the same time, I got Mudvayne's Live Dosage, Live in Peoria on VHS as well, which was cool.
That would have been good. Berber ding, berber ding.
Exactly. It was funny, I just saw them recently.
I saw them too.
Yeah, it was really cool. You know,
Cold Chamber?
Cold Chamber.
Yeah.
And Mudvayne at Metropolis Perth over here in WA. Yeah. And that was great, a bit of a blast from the past. And I've seen Mudvayne twice, because I haven't been to Australia that many times. I've seen Mudvayne back in like 2005, I think.
Yeah.
And then this year. And I actually think they were better this year.
Mm.
And same with Cold Chamber. I saw Cold Chamber in like 2012 at like Soundwave or something.
Okay.
And I genuinely believe Mudvayne was better. And both Mudvayne and Cold Chamber better now than they were back then, which is, you know, saying something about the professionalism of those guys and girls. Chamber. But yeah, back to Slipknot. Yeah, I mean, it was a crazy time. That was the thing, actually.
It was that new metal scene. It was like
new
that
metal
whole thing.
You're probably about the same age I am. Like sound, if Slipknot was one of your gateway bands, we grew up and new metal was the thing that was coming to the fore. That was the, and yeah, it was huge. New metal started off as an underground and then just got huge. And Slipknot was one of those bands which propelled it. Although, you know, there is the debate whether Slipknot are new metal or not, you know, because you had Cold Chambers and such beforehand.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Slipknot was part of that movement, I would say, and definitely, again, a gateway. Much like a lot of new metal bands, you know, you can say that about Korn and Cold Chamber and such as well. But, yeah, Slipknot for me were ushered in that whole, you know, the whole generation of metalheads, you know?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And, like, I guess going back to the, you know, new metal typecast, because I know a lot of those bands hated that label, but a lot of them also evolved away from that scene. You know, you had bands like Deftones who definitely changed.
I was going to say Deftones.
Yeah. Deftones is like the number one point. It's like, okay, what about new metal bands? It's like, yeah, Deftones, but they fucking evolved, you know. And, you know, the same as well with Slipknot. I mean, I would definitely call the first album new metal. I don't know if I'd call anything else after it, but Anyway, you're blurring the lines, subgenres, all that bullshit, and we all love to label stuff in the end of the day. But either way, it was good goddamn metal, and a perfect way to get into, well, that whole genre, especially, like you said, when you're around about that age. You know, you had Korn, you had Deftones, Mudvayne, all these other groups, and Slipknot was just amongst them, and pretty much the kings. I mean, if you were like listening to Limp Bizkit, then you know Slipknot was complete different area. And I remember a DeviantArt. Do you remember this website?
Yeah.
There was always like there was a few artists, and there was one that was very prominent. He always used to draw a whole bunch of the bands around about this era. And I remember he drew this one, and it was like Fred Durst being like crucified and Slipknot, you know, surrounding him, like lighting his feet on fire and shit like that.
I remember DeviantArt, and there was a lot of people were doing that whole Slipknot versus ICP thing. They had them Slipknot decapitating ICP, or Slipknot versus Mushroomhead as well.
The Mushroomhead is the big one,
because you know, everyone's like, well, they're rivals, and I'm like, well, they're from different parts of the country, and you know, if you want to be technical about it, Mushroomhead were around longer than Slipknot, and I, you know, they were all like, oh, they sound the same. I'm like, no,
no,
at all. If you actually listen to them, they don't really sound the same. There's elements, yes. But I mean, you know, if you actually listen to them, you're like, no, they're not, you know, the same at all.
Oh, on a completely somewhat related note, I should say, have you checked out the Anders Colsefni re-recording of Mate, Feed, Kill, Repeat?
No, I haven't heard the re-recording. I have like a burnt version of the original Mate, Feed, Kill, Repeat as well. You know, obviously, because back then, another one that I got a mate who had slightly better internet to download for me. Burnt it onto a disc for me, and I remember hearing that and being like, yeah, this is kind of cool, I guess. It was pretty cool. There was some good stuff on it, and, you know, you could pick the songs where they changed them. I think the self-titled song Slipknot, they ended up making into, not Eyeless. Was it Eyeless?
No, I think Eyeless was its own track.
Sick. Sick.
Sick.
They took that from the self-titled song Slipknot. It just sped it up a bit. If you hear the, you know, dun, 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 dun,
dun,
dun. I'm like, dude, that's just that sped up. So
it's kind of
cool to hear the evolution of those songs. You know, and obviously there's only one is still pretty much the same song, and
Tattered and Torn. No, Gently, I think it was. Gently is on there.
Gently is on there. Yep.
And what was the other one? Killers Be Quiet, which I think...
Killers Be Quiet, which turned into...
Is it Eeyore or something like that?
No, it's Killers Be Quiet turned into Iowa. Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, that's dun, it. Dun,
dun. Yeah. They had that song, was it Do Nothing Bitch Slap? With all the...
it was the Bungle influence. I'm just like, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. I didn't... But yeah, I mean... I haven't heard the, to answer your question, I haven't heard the re-recording. No, have you heard it?
Yeah, I did a review on it just a couple of days ago, and it's good. It brings out brutality within, I guess, that Slipknot kind of sound. But there seems to be a little bit of problems surrounding it as it's coming to light. Apparently it was released a bit earlier than it should have been, and is in a bit of a demo kind of stage. It's as of recording this episode anyway, there's a little bit of a wow, what's going on then, you know? Because I know Anders, he wants to tour with Corey Taylor's blessing regarding that album as well. It's good though. Do check it out. If you type in Chaosis, which is a New Zealand band. They were like the backing band for Anders on this one, and you can find it through that.
Chaosis with a CH or with like a K?
Kaosis.
Yeah.
So you can check it out through that means.
Did you type in Anders Colsefni and Mate, Feed, Kill, Repeat, or do you have to type in Chaosis?
I think if you type in Chaosis, it's easy to search. Or you can just type in Mate, Feed, Kill, Repeat, probably, and get the easiest way. But there you go, people out there. If you're curious, you can actually go back and listen to re-recordings of the original demo from Slipknot. And Anders is the original singer before Corey jumped into it. So
yeah, we probably should say that.
preface this one.
We're just sort of waxing lyrical on things.
We're expecting everyone just to know, you know?
yeah, exactly. Probably should have thought thought of that.
Come on, people, catch up to speed here. So,
yeah, yeah.
So I think we've got that first debut Slipknot album covered pretty much. Which one would you want to cover next in regards to Fear Factory or Nailbomb?
All right, we'll go chronologically how in order I got into them. We'll go Fear Factory.
Nice.
Obsolete, which is probably one of my favorite albums of all time. If wow. not my favorite album of all time. If you put a gun, like, not that I like, I'm like, odds definitely, but if you put a gun to my head and said, pick your favorite album of all time, like, just the first thing that would come to mind would be Fear Factory's Obsolete. Now, Fear Factory took me a little bit to get into.
Oh, yeah.
Because I liked, initially, because I was an immature teenager, I liked the aggression. I love the industrial crunchy guitars, this, you know, syncopated, you know,
Oh, yeah.
I love that sort of, you know, those rhythms and such. I love the drums, man. The drums on Fear Factory, man. Jeez. Like, you know, just remember hearing that.
Yeah. I remember seeing in a magazine, it was a skateboarding magazine back in the day, and they were drawing about Fear Factory's drumming patterns, and they just had the drummer, like, plugged into a three-phase outlet, and it's like, oh, so that's how you do it, you know?
Yeah, it's, yeah, I just remember hearing that and being like, wow, that's inhuman, you know? The drums, you know, and the vocals. But I remember, like, being not massively keen on the cleans initially, but, like, they grew on me, and, you know, I love them now. And Burton C. Bell is one of my favorite vocalists of all time.
He's actually so good.
All of my favorite vocalists actually have unique voices. The sort of vocalist that as soon as you hear him, you're like, oh, that's that guy.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, as soon as you hear Burton C. Bell, you're like, well, that's Burton C. Bell. As soon as you hear Corey Taylor, that's Corey Taylor. Max Cavalera, you know what I mean? Gina Marino, you know, like we were talking about before. Chad from Mudvayne. As soon as you hear them, it's very distinct. You're like, oh, that's that guy.
Yeah.
Rob Flynn from Machine Head as well.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Hill from Rammstein, you know, all that sort of
You're
stuff.
You're just rattling again, off a best of at this stage.
Oh, yeah. Well, because the thing is like, you know, these albums existed and they were around the same time as I was getting into all these other bands as well. So anytime I think of these particular albums, I think of those bands as well because I was listening to them. Mm. Like I said, Paul, my friend from high school, was the same guy who was like about Slipknot, was like, told me about Rammstein. He was like, dude, you heard of this band Rammstein? There's like six or seven of them, and they're like from Germany, and they fuck each other up the ass on stage, and they shoot flames from their face. And I was like, where do I sign up? Do you know what I mean? Like you just, yeah. And then
it's, you know, the schoolyard talking, you know. You're like, nah, this has got to be bullshit here. But no,
same thing though. I heard about that straight down to Sanity that later that day or whatever. Picked up Rammstein's Mutter.
I could imagine Sanity, like an employee just sitting there with a magazine, looks up and then just goes, ah, it's you again. Just goes back
exactly
to it.
Exactly. I mean, it's the same. You know, I used to go to Sanity down at like Carousel Shopping Center here in Cannington, so my local, and like, used to go down there, and that's where I got, you know, Slipknot self-titled, Rammstein's Mutter, Deftones' White Pony, you know. Oh. So, you know, that's where, you know, and I have those memories. And so when I talk about any one of these albums, I think my mind just shoots off into like, and that album, and remember this, and remember that, and,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
You know, because it's your formative years. You
Hell
know,
yeah. Well. You're growing up on this stuff, and this is the most impressionable music as well, so...
Exactly. So, yeah, I mean, and Fear Factory for me was, you know, much like Slipknot was a game changer in the scene, Fear Factory was actually, you know, they came out before Slipknot, obviously, and I think directly influenced Slipknot, and you can sort of hear that in the music.
Yeah.
And obviously in the vocal style, because previous to Burton C. Bell, there wasn't too many, if any, vocalists doing the harsh screams and the growls with the clean singing in the choruses. So you was one of the first to influence the next generation of vocalists coming through, like you, Corey Taylors and such. I think previous to that, most singers, you know, were, they either screamed or growled, or they sang. They didn't really do both. You know, people argue, you know, Phil Anselmo, and I was like, yeah, I guess. You know, and I'm not, you know, downplaying his influence on the metal scene and such, but Burton with his cleans, very unique style.
Well, it was like two singers, you know, like
that's exactly what people used to say, the two singer thing. Yeah, exactly.
Like a lot of these other vocalists or whatever, Phil Anselmo, I don't know, James Hetfield, if you want to go further back, for example. Yeah, they do a little bit of like downplaying it clean, but it's not clean, it's just softly spoken, I guess, almost. And
yeah, I mean, you know, they're great singers in their own right. Sure, but this guy could, like, his cleans were clean.
There was a switch. There was just a switch, and he'd just go between.
You know, whereas they sort of had more, like, to use a vocalist term, heat on their vocals, and where these guys had fire and then the clean. So it went between fire and clean instead of, like, fire and heat, you know? So it was, like you said, the switch, which is as a vocalist, I know that's ridiculously hard to do. So props to all of them, you know. But yeah, Burton C. Bell, and but just the for me, the, also that Fear Factory, I remember hearing them and just thinking to myself in my naive, you know, because when you're young, you don't have any perspective on life or the world or music at that stage. I thought to myself, like, hey, this band, they sound so futuristic, Fear Factory. And I remember thinking, they're always going to sound ahead of the game. They're always going to sound futuristic. And actually, to this day, I still think so, because, you know, they kind of have that, like, sci-fi movie track sort of thing.
Yeah, okay.
They did, like, with all the samples from The Terminator and Blade Runner and such in a lot of their songs. So, you know, and they were probably one of the first bands I heard with samples and stuff and synths and keys in the background, which again really influenced myself and All This Filth with that sort of sound. You know, I wanted to do that, to incorporate that into my sound, because I just loved the industrial overtones and just the soundscapes you could have, as well as the metal, you know.
And
industrial metal probably became, if I had to pick one of my favorite subgenres of metal, because obviously through them I got into, you know, bands like Static X and Ministry and then Nailbomb and then, you know, and then, you know, Godflesh, and then some of the, you know, new bands like Three Teeth and such like that, you know. So, you know, it set me off on another course of discovery, obviously into industrial metal and then industrial just as well. You know, with KMFDM and, you know, Nine Inch Nails and what have you as well. So, they were a massive influence on me. They sort of game changing bands, you know, Slipknot, Fear Factory. And still to this day, like, they have a unique sound that they pioneered. And obviously, you know, you can make the argument like, well, they just took what Ministry did and made it a bit more metal. I'm like, yeah, but everybody's doing that. Everybody's taking their influences and then adding their own spin to it and combining things to then progress their sound. And I'm like, yeah,
that's just how music works, though, you know.
Exactly, that's evolution, right?
Yeah.
So Fear Factory is obsolete. Like, a lot of people were like, oh, but D-Manufacture. I'm like, yes, D-Manufacture is a fantastic album. But truthfully, you know, because, you know, I was the age I was, Obsolete came out in 1998. That was my first year of high school. And I was starting to get into this stuff between 98 and the year 2000. Obsolete was the album that really captured me, because I actually think it's just slightly more mature album than D-Manufacture.
Yeah.
Like, don't get me wrong, I love D-Manufacture. I love both albums for different reasons, but I think Fear Factory is a bit more of a complete album. It's got songs that are sort of almost more poppy as well. You know, like something like Descent, really light, but like still got the, you know, did the cover.
It's a bit of a change compared to D-Manufacture, you know?
Yeah, it is. And it's still aggressive, though, because you still got Shock. You've still got Edgecrusher. You've still got Smasher Devourer. You know, those are heavy songs, man.
Gotta love these titles of tracks sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Edgecrusher, just, that's the pit song, man.
Edgecrusher is amazing. And the bass as well. Like, they change it up with that. What is it? They use a double bass, I think, in that one.
Yep. Yeah. Stand up double bass. Yeah, exactly.
Which is like, why would you use a double bass in metal? Nah, but Fear Factory did, and it freaking worked. Do it.
Yeah, I mean, it sounded great, you know. Now, obviously, they don't do it live. Well, no. I haven't seen any footage of them doing it live. It would be pretty impractical to drag a big double bass around Life on
unless
Tour.
Unless you're like The Living End or something, but you know, that's a bit different. But that's their entire sound for The Living End. Like that's
Yeah, you would only do it in that one Fear Factory song. It'd hardly be worth.
Sorry, it just reminded me because you mentioned Roadrunner and Typo Negative before, but I remember there was the video clip for Christian Woman, I think it was, and there's Peter Green just standing there because he's like, you know, 6'6", tall motherfucker, and he's standing there with the double bass, and it looks like a tiny normal bass guitar.
Was that Black Number One?
Black Number One, yeah, that's it.
Yeah, you're right.
He's standing there with the upright bass, and he's holding it like a... he's standing there with the double bass, but he's holding it like a normal bass, and it looks small, because the guy is as tall as a goddamn basketball player.
The guy's like 7 foot tall, you know?
Yeah.
He had that deep bass voice, you know?
Oh,
like,
my God. Yeah, he was perfect. He was a bass player with a baritone voice, if anything, you know? He just emulated his machine there. I guess when it came to, you know, Fear Factory for me, I missed the boat getting into them early back in the day. I definitely had a few of their songs. You know, I liked a few of their tracks, but I never got my hands anyway on some of their albums. And the first album I went and listened to was The Manufacture.
Yeah.
So for me, you're saying I'm silly, but now you're pointing out these things. I'm like, yeah, you know what? The Manufacture is good. Somewhat flawed to a tiny degree, very tiny, but Obsolete feels like a bit more of a precise, refined record.
Yes, you know?
And I think now I guess I can understand where you're coming from, and especially given the fact that he also grew up with it as well. You grew up with it, I should say. That helps a massive part as well. For an album like Obsolete, and. It's Edge Crusher. Damn, I just can't get over that track.
Yeah, it's a great song. You know, like I was telling you before we came on air, like, you know, we opened for Machine Head and Fear Factory just a couple of weeks ago here in Perth, which was a fantastic show. And, you know, it's not the original lineup of Fear Factory, so we'll get that out of the way. But the new lineup killed it. They were great, sounded awesome. New singer nailed it. And like, you know, that song Edge Crusher came on, and I was still like, yeah, you know, in the pit, you know, it's one of the ones you got to get in the pit for, basically, you know.
Oh yeah,
like, this is cool.
And what's that like? Because I was gonna lead into this one actually, that I saw you had opened up for Fear Factory and Machine Head recently when they toured Australia. What's that like to, I guess, come from an aspect where this is one of your biggest albums growing up, and here you are now opening for the band themselves?
Yeah, so a bit of context there. Machine Head also is one of my favorite all-time bands as well growing up. So this gig was massive for me, like probably more than anyone else in the band, because both I had tickets to this gig anyways. I was going to this gig because I love those bands. And then, like, you know, we'd applied to open for them, and we didn't think they'd be openers, because the last couple of times Machine Head have been in Australia, they've done like an evening with, so it was like just 3 hours, just Machine Head, no openers. And I thought, well, they've got Machine Head and Fear Factory. I was like, they're both headliners in their own right.
Hmm.
So I figured they're both going to play hour and a half, 2 hour sets each, and there'll be no openers. Hmm. So I hadn't really planned on, you know, we applied for it in hope, just not thinking anything. And then we got the email, and it was like, yeah, you guys are opening. And we're like, what? Like, you know, my manager, he messaged me, and I was like, he was like, you got the Fear Factory Machine Head support. And I was like, that's not funny, man. Don't message me, man. Like,
this ain't April Fools, is it?
Yeah, exactly. I was like, that's not funny, man. That's, you know, and he was like, no, seriously. And I was like, whoa, cool. So, you know, so yeah, it was a surreal moment to open for them as well. People have been asking me, like, oh, you know, were you nervous? And I was like, not really, in a weird sort of way, because, you know, we've been around a while now, and we've sort of slowly risen up through the ranks, and like, we've worked very hard to get there. So I was more excited. I was more anxious about the logistics of the gig, like getting there, setting up, where are we going, you know. But once I'm on stage, once I start singing, and once we're playing, everything's fine. Do you know what I mean? Like, then I'm in the zone, and I'm like, it was great to have a massive crowd. Obviously the biggest crowd we've ever played to, it was like sold out, 1,100 people, I think it was. So, you know, a big venue with a balcony, you know what I mean? Like,
oh shit.
Like I did that. I did that. Yeah, I thought to myself, you know, I'm going to do some crowd work here. And I was like, when am I going to get this opportunity again? So I did that whole, how's everyone up the top doing today in the balcony? And everyone, they were like, yeah. And I was like, sweet, the crowd are into this. And I was like, how's everyone up the back? And they're like, yeah. And I was like, how's everyone in the pit? And they were like, and I was like, that's where it's at. Let's do this, you know? So, you know, I had to have my little rock star moment because I was like, when am I going to get a chance to say, how's everyone in the balcony again? Like, let's be realistic here, you know? Metal's not the biggest genre in the world, and especially, you know, here in Australia. So when you're playing local gigs, they're much, much smaller shows.
Oh, know? Yeah.
we have a great following, don't get me wrong. We have great support here in Perth, and we've got some good fans in the eastern states and what have you, and a few fans scattered across the world here and there. But, you know, this was you know, next level. So, yeah, it was really cool and a good moment, like, of, like, you know, if you put Machine Head and Fear Factory together, they're two elements that definitely make up a lot of all this filth. So, yeah, it was fantastic. Probably one of the best nights I've had in a while, because after opening and playing a really cool opening set, I got to walk off stage and just go watch two of my favorite bands of all time, like, winning. Do you know what I mean?
Hell, and then, yeah.
And it was great because I stood up near the sound desk, sort of near where the bar was, between the sound desk and the bar. And then all night, people were walking to the bar and they were recognizing me. They were like, so, you know, you can't really hear at gigs, but people would look at me and they'd go, oh. And then they'd point at the stage and I'm like, yeah, yeah, that was me on the stage. And they're like, yeah, you guys are wicked, you know? Yeah, they're shouting in your face because, you know, it's loud, and they're like, you guys are awesome, rah rah. You know, I don't think I bought a drink for the rest of the night. Do you know what I mean? By the time Fear Factory finished, I was standing there with both hands, with drinks in both hands and a drink next to me on the ground. I'm like,
oh no, man. Such a shame.
Yeah, no, yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, first world problems, right? Like, I don't have enough hands to hold all the free drinks people are buying me, but. But to be fair, those moments, as you probably know, in metal anyways, and in the music industry in general, are few and far between. So, you know, I took the moment in, I enjoyed it for what it was, and yeah, it was a great night all around.
Yeah, perfect. That's what you got to do. You got to take those, like, wins and stuff like that.
Definitely.
When you get a good concert as well, fuck, you know. Mm. And that would have been something crazy, I guess, from, like, your perspective, where you bought tickets to the gig before. Yeah. Obviously, they update these info as they come along, but you probably would have got the email and it's like, your band is performing, and you're kind of, you're probably looking at the ticket card, oh, look at that, that's me, that's my name.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, it was a bit like that once we got announced, and we made a little, like, you know, we had they had the tour poster, and our manager sort of made a tour, a version of the tour poster, and put our logo on it as well.
Because,
you know, they didn't really have time to do that. And they eventually did, like, the, yeah, you know, list eventually did, but we made little one. And I was like, that's really cool. Cause, you know, you got awesome. The Machine Head, Fear Factory, all this filth. And I was like, you know, and really, when you look at it, that's evolution, right?
Yeah. Know? Like, I mean, right. These guys all started a small band somewhere as well. Exactly. So.
Exactly. So it's like this plus this equals that, you know, so. That's kind of cool. You know, obviously them, and again, I've, you know, there's heaps of other bands that influence as well. Sepultura as well, Max Cavalera, you know, anything that guy touches.
The man of a million riffs, freaking Max Cavalera. Like, geez, yeah, that exactly. Guy is just full of riffs. I swear he's got a new album out every week or something, you know.
It's a new side project every other week as well, you know. You know, yeah, because when you think about it, you know, Sepultura, Soulfly, Nail Bomb,
Cavalera Conspiracy, yeah.
Killer Be Killed,
yeah.
I mean, that new one, what are they called?
Yeah,
the last two albums they've got of them. What are they called? Go Ahead and Die. Yeah, no, yeah,
so simple.
Yeah, Go Ahead and Die, yeah.
But that's such a Cavalera thing, and I guess. Yeah. Also a perfect transition onto the next album.
Yes, which neatly brings us round. Nail Bomb, Point Blank.
I've got to say straight up, before you discuss this one, I knew of this album's existence for a very long time, but I never listened to it in full, only up until about a couple of weeks ago, around about the time you messaged me. And it's also got its 30th anniversary this year, a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I thought, what perfect opportunity, you know, what perfect timing. 30th anniversary was a couple of weeks ago. You've mentioned this album almost within the same time frame. I think it was only about a week difference. I like the universe is telling me I gotta go listen to this freaking effort. So I went in and I listened to this effort for the first time in full, and yeah.
Yep.
There is a lot to unpack with this one. So Nailbomb. Well,
first, what did you think? What did you think? I know you're like mind blown, but like let's put it into words. What did you think?
Okay, yeah, so I had heard, you know, one or two tracks here or there, and I kind of like, yeah, they're fine, you know, decent little metal entries there. And maybe it was the album's artwork that always put me off. It's so goddamn a it's such an impactful album cover. If you're not aware, maybe if I'm editing this, remember, please, usually I forget, but to put the album artwork up. And if I didn't, it's a person pointing a gun at someone's head, and it is a real image. That is a real photo from the Vietnam War. I've been to Vietnam several times. I've been to all the museums regarding that, so I know exactly a lot from that aspect. But the music itself, I was listening to it in Vietnam, to be honest. I was on holidays. So, oh, wow. Yeah, there was like this weird whole, like, yeah, the whole universe was weirdly connected in this one instance when I was listening to it. Which, actually, while I was in Vietnam, I went and checked out where the Burning Monk was. You know, that photo, the Rage Against the Machines album cover. Yeah, I went to that location as well. Because, yeah, it's such a massive, impactful scene, obviously, for that one. But as for the music, I don't know. I guess when I listened to their songs back in the day, I wasn't really... Because it's very heavy. It's very hard. It's hard-hitting stuff, right? And I wasn't... I don't know how to describe this. I wasn't prepared, maybe, you know? And over the last couple of years, I've started to get into much heavier stuff with, you know, Behemoth and a whole bunch of other bands, really opening up a few more of the black metal scenes, and you know, it's all this other stuff. But when I listened to Nailbomb this time around, I don't know, it all clicked. Its aggression just finely tuned. It's a very, like we said, it's a very hard hitting album, as the album cover suggests, but it was such an impactful record. I don't know how to describe it too well, because it was leaving me speechless, you know, when I'm going through it and hearing, you know, Gorillaz, for example, or Cockroaches and these other songs. Yeah. Just the first, like, you know, couple of tracks are just wasting away by, what's that one? Vai Toma no Ku. Which, that's interestingly, I don't know if that's I'm going to guess that's... a Brazilian wording, but if it's Vietnamese, coup is dick. So, and yeah, that's all I thought of when I was listening to that. But yeah, you know, Cockroaches, powerful, fuck, you know, it's just such an interesting little band and a one-off side project. They only performed one concert, I think.
Two.
Was they it two, two concerts?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And they actually released one of them as a live thing live at Dynamo. It's called Nailbomb proud to commit commercial suicide, which is actually funny because it's a Max Cavalera thing. So Nailbomb, for those who don't know, is a side project of Max Cavalera from, you know, at the time just Sepultura, no Soulfly at that time. He was still in Sepultura at the time, and Alex Newport from a band, I don't even know how to describe them, like grungy noise.
Like the Melvins.
Yeah. So that sort of vibe band called Fudge Tunnel.
That's it, yeah.
From England. And funnily enough, Alex Newport ended up marrying one of Max's daughter, and so he became part of the Cavalera family.
Oh. By marriage.
But anyways, yeah, so it was just the two of them. And a freaking drum machine back in the day. This is before like your Pro Tools and all your different drum editing programs. This is literally an old school drum machine, you know. And you know, they did, you know, when they recorded, they had some tracks with a drummer, and when they played live, they obviously had a drummer. Hmm. But they mixed sort of. It's hard to describe.
It's like industrial. It's industrial elements in the drumming styles, but with
there's industrial There's groove metal, there's thrash, like obviously a bit of death, a bit of hardcore punk. I wouldn't say grind, but like there's that like sludgy sort of, you know, noise sort of element to it from the, you know, from Fudge Tunnel influence. And but yeah, it's just the two of them doing both of them playing guitar and vocals. So they go vocals back and forwards. Interesting side note is I've read a lot of interviews with Max Cavalera because obviously, like, you know, like I'm just obsessed with the guy. And he says to this day it's still probably his favorite album ever because it's the heaviest album he's ever done.
Wow.
Because it is, like, just in like you said, everything about it's heavy. The imagery,
yeah.
It's heavy imagery. The album is just, it's in your face. It's not like heavy, like, as in like brutal death metal.
No.
Like, you've got to hear it.
It's visceral. Like,
yes, it's impactful. Hmm. It sounds very simple as well. And like a lot of the riffs are simple and it's simplistic, but like primitive and visceral. And I think it's great because it's also what I wanted to do with All This Filth is perfectly combine the precision and mechanical side of like industrial metal with like the, you know, what they did with the more groove and tribal and thrash metal side of it, which is very aggressive, but not as precise. It's very, I wouldn't say it's loose, you know what I mean? But it's not mechanical. It's very organic. So you got mechanical and organic, and they've combined that in this project where it's like, wow, that's really cool, you know what I mean? So I mean, like, other bands have done similar but different things, like Chimera, for example. I'm wearing a Chimera shirt right now if you can see it, but they did the same thing, similar thing, you know, adding, but it's, you know, more what they're doing, adding groove metal to with a bit of an industrial tinge, which they're another band that's a big influence for myself and All This Filth, Chimera. But back to Nail Bomb, so yeah, it's this side project. They played two shows ever because it was just a one-off side project. And one of them was a festival. They did the first show, which was just a club show in Belgium to warm up for the festival, the Dynamo Festival. And they did that. And there's no footage of that club show, but apparently it's legendary. Anyone who was there, apparently there was, like, sold out because it was a tiny little club and there was people outside wanting to get in and listen to it.
Oh.
They played the next day at the festival, and there's a DVD you can watch, which, like I said, Dynamo, and their live album as well, CD, Proud to Commit Commercial Suicide, which is great, which is actually a phrase that Max got when, you know, he was in Sepultura, and he started turning in, like, demos for Sepultura's Roots album, when they started to go all, you know, like, really
tribal.
Yeah, really slow the music down and such, and down tune. And Monty Connor at Roadrunner Records was like, this is insane. You're abandoning, like, you know, your roots here. You're abandoning, you know, your sound. Like, he goes, I hope you know, you're committing commercial suicide here. And Max was like, you'll see. And obviously, Roots did what Roots did. And so he was right. And so he got that, yeah, you know, he had that phrase stuck in his head. So therefore, the, you know, Nail Bomb album called Proud to Commit Commercial Suicide, you know, which is funny because basically it was the last thing Nail Bomb did, really. I mean, Max did those shows a couple of years ago where he, you know, Soulfly performed Nail Bomb. If you remember, they did a tour of Soulfly performs Nail Bomb without Alex Newport. It was, they didn't come to Australia, unfortunately, because I definitely would have gone. But yeah, it's this weird, like, obviously, it's funny because, like, as I'm thinking about this, all these albums, so like Slipknot came out after Fear Factory, but I got into Slipknot before Fear Factory, and Nail Bomb came out before all of them, and I got into Nail Bomb after all these bands as well. Like, I'm going backwards, because I think that's a good thing about metal is, like, I think when you're just getting into it, you tend to get into what's coming out right then and there. So for us growing up, the new metal thing was big, so, you know, Slipknot is your gateway, gets you in. And then you hear all the bands that are coming out at the time, and you're like, cool. And obviously you can't hear what's coming out in the future because we don't have a time machine. You can't travel to the future.
No.
But then you start going, who influenced these bands? Like, you know, hear about these other bands, and you start going back and start listening to shit that influenced the bands that you're already listening to, which is how I got into a lot of bands. But yeah, Nailbomb was one of those things that I got into, you know, probably, I'd say maybe 2004, 2005-ish.
Yeah.
So my, you know, if you say the year 1998 to 2000 was my early years, this is, I'm still on early years, but starting to develop, like, progress. You know, yeah, I know. You know, by this stage, I'm already well indoctrinated into, you know, machine head.
Well versed in all those metal bands.
Exactly. And so, and Sepultura, and I'd already had all of Sepultura's albums by that stage, you know, on CD and what have you. And so then, yeah, I was like, oh, I've got to hear this Nailbomb, man. I'd heard like Wasting Away on a Roadrunner compilation or something like that.
Mm.
And yeah, I bought the album. Like you said, that album cover, as soon as you pick it up, you look at it, you're like, wow, that is something, because that is, I've heard interviews with Max Cavalera, and, you know, people have asked him, did you know what happened to that person? And like, the thing is I don't think anybody knows, but I mean, it probably didn't end well.
No,
you know?
No, it did not.
So yeah, everything about it is just heavy. And it's funny because, again, Max, in another interview, I read that where he recorded that album was literally in a house that they were living in at the time.
Mm.
And so he was living in it with his family. And so Alex Newport would come over and they recorded it in the house. And
yeah, right.
And now that house is a school for the deaf.
Oh, shut the front door. No way.
So yeah, in Phoenix, Arizona, and you know, he says, because he still lives in Phoenix, Arizona.
Yeah,
Phoenix, Arizona. Still, yeah, but yeah. Anyways, so he goes, sometimes he drives past that street, drives past that house, and it's school for the deaf, and he goes, I gotta have a little chuckle to myself. I'm paraphrasing here, but yeah, you know, I have a chuckle to myself that probably one of the heaviest albums I've ever recorded is now a school
for the deaf.
Where I recorded it is now school for the deaf.
That's,
you know?
That sounds like a joke that was written for the bloody death clock or something, you know, Metal Octopus.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you can't write this, right? You know, it's life. Life is way, you know, truth is way stranger than fiction.
Hell yeah.
So, yeah, that's an interesting little tidbit for you. But, yeah, this album, I mean, it just hits you. And, like, I can describe it, and it's you can describe it, and can paint a picture with 1,000 words and it still won't do it justice. And I think that's like any album, really, you have to experience it.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, people can give you this is what it kind of sounds like. And if it sort of, you know, sparks your interest, go, well, I kind of like that style of music. I kind of like those bands. I might go check it out. That's cool. That's the best we can do, is say, this is what it's kind of like.
Yeah.
Like, you know, because the influences for that, again, I've read interviews, you know, Ministry was a big one, and then they took what they were doing, like the hardcore punk stuff, the, you know, thrash, and yeah, apparently it came from, like, you know, them just sort of jamming and showing each other riffs.
All right.
Yeah, so they were like, oh, here's this, you know, Sepultura riff, and then Alex Newport was like, well, here's this Fudge Tunnel riff, and then they were like, oh, that's kind of cool, what if you did this, what if we did that? And that's why there's a bonus track at the end of, it might be Point Blank, it might be Proud to Commit Commercial Suicide. Either way, there's a bonus track. I don't know if you've heard it, but it's like, it's one of those things where there's heaps of silence, heaps of silence, heaps of silence.
Oh, the CD one, the old school one. Yep.
Yeah. So I think it's actually after the song Sick Life on the album on Point Blank. And so it gets to the end and it busts out into, like, you just start hearing this music, and then it goes into the riff, the breakdown from Dead Embryonic Cells, Sepultura. And then from there, it busts into, like, instead of going into the breakdown, it busts into something similar to Fudge Tunnel's Spanish Fly. Which, so they're combining the two, and it's kind of interesting because, you know, if you know, the story is that they were showing each other riffs, and apparently those were the riffs that they were showing each other, and that inspired Nailbomb. And I'm like, that's what? Really
cool. It's the weird little medley, and that's how it's started a whole band.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. So yeah, that's sort of just a little secret track at the end, like a little, like, tidbit goes to like 20 seconds or something, you know, and they've just bust into it. And I'm like, that's really cool, because it sounds really, it's got a really different edge to it. But yeah, I mean, the album, yeah, it's just, it's very hard to describe.
It is very difficult. Did you know about, like, Alex Newport post Nailbomb? He's gone into being a producer.
Yeah. He produced, like, I think it was like Locusts and a whole bunch of bands. Like,
he did
like,
he did the EP for the Mars Volta. I think he's also done a bunch of what was that band that they did before with the Mars Volta? I can think of the album In and Out and Casino or whatever. At the Drive-In, I think he did a few of their records.
Oh, cool, yeah.
Yeah, but he also did Block Party. I just had to check it there, which was like, what?
Yeah. I mean, you know, whatever. A job's a job, right?
Like, I'll take. But it's just such a weird Imagine Block Party, like, sitting there and going, shit, we love Nail Bomb. We want the guy. Can we get him as the producer?
I can't imagine that, I mean, maybe, yeah. Who knows?
Who knows? Yeah. You might be writing something that's a bit lot different to what your music taste actually is.
I mean, you know, but, you know, if he does good work, he does good work. You know, it might have been recommended by someone else. Who knows? But, but it's interesting because, apparently he had no real interest in playing live so much. Because I remember Max was saying when they played those two Nail Bomb shows, he, like, Alex Newport had his back to the crowd a lot of the time. And apparently he used to do that in Fudge Tunnel as well, because that's how they met, Sepultura and Fudge Tunnel toured.
Okay.
And like, hey, man, you might want to, like, face the crowd or whatever. And apparently Alex is not big on playing live. He doesn't really like it that much, according to what I've read. I don't know the guy, so I don't know personally. But, yeah, apparently. So, yeah, that's why he sort of got into the producing thing, didn't really want to go out and tour and play live, which is fair enough.
Yeah.
But... yeah, I mean, either way, it's a crazy time in history where these two creative people just got together and made this crazy album, which again influenced me, you know, in a huge way. I think one of my things is like, I think I've gone on record a couple times with the dudes in All This Filth, and I'm like, dude, I just want to combine Fear Factory, Chimera, and Nail Bombs Point Blank, and I just want to make something like that album. You know, I want to want to do something that blows people's minds. I want that vibe. I want that edge. You know, and I think I'm always just going to try. It's always going to be one of my goals to like reach for that. You know, we'd like not copy, obviously, because there's no point trying because you're just not, and it's just you're going to be derivative. But to add that element, it's always in the back of my head. Like I said, I've got, you know, they only released one album. I've got two Nail Bomb shirts. Well, two albums, including the live one.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've got Nail Bomb shirts, and like, you know, I love it when I you know, play a show and I've got a Nail Bomb shirt on, and people are like, "Who are Nail Bomb?" And I'm like, "Oh, poor. Dude,
where, let me tell you."
Exactly, and then we go down this rabbit hole that we've just gone down.
Mm.
So yeah, it's yeah, and like I said, I got into it after those previous two albums we've spoken about, but it's that doesn't make it any less influential. You know, I can still be influenced to this day. I'll hear a band where I'm like, wow, that's really cool. You know, I want to incorporate some ideas they've got going into what we're doing. You know, you could say, oh, well, that you're ripping people off. I'm like, well, not really. It's just, you know, influence, you know, it's where you get inspiration from. Nail Bomb Point Blank. I can't,
We can't speak highly enough of the album. If you haven't listened to it, listen to it.
Yeah, all three of these albums, but this would probably be the least well-known of the three albums.
Yeah.
Definitely, because, you know, like you said, a lot of people are aware of it but haven't heard it, and I dare say, you know, check it out. And it might be a bit abrasive for a lot of people first up. You might be like, what the hell? Like, especially that sound now, because back then that was like, wow, where's this come from? You know, there was only, you know, few bands doing that sort of thing, but now, you know, it's a bit more common.
They were very ahead of the curve, actually, when you're thinking about it a little bit to that
degree.
Yeah.
Definitely. Definitely way ahead of their time. You know, well, you know, you can argue like, well, Ministry was doing that industrial metal thing, you know, I'm like, yeah, but not like that.
No. Like Ministry were doing Ministry. Nail Bomb is...
Yeah. That's what I mean. You can't really describe it because you're like, well, yeah, they took influence from Ministry, but I wouldn't say they sound anything like Ministry, really.
Mm.
There's a little bit in it. If you're a big Ministry fan like I am, you sort of can pick elements out. But you know, there's more, you know, Sepultura, there's more hardcore punk in it. There's, you know, there's more Fudge Tunnel in it, obviously. So
yeah.
you know, check it out. I, you know, all three of these albums, if you haven't heard them, like straight after this, after watching this, get on it, queue it up on a playlist, get the vinyls, buy the CDs, however you listen to your music, check them out. I can't recommend them highly enough.
And add a fourth to that list, being, you know, All This Filth with Tomorrow Will Be Better, the combination of these three records.
If you've got time, if you've got time, do us a favor and check out our album, Tomorrow Will Be Better. Just came out in February this year. And it's got elements of all these things in it, and it's All This Filth. It's an All This Filth album. If you're familiar with this, you'll know what to expect. It's I've done a few interviews recently where it's funny because like I obviously am involved in the process from start to finish with the album, with any of our albums, any of our songs.
Mm.
And I've spoken to people, and people ask me, how do I feel about the album? And I always say, ask me again in a couple of years, because for me, when it first comes out, I'm just like through the process of like recording, getting through and releasing it. I haven't really grown with the album yet. And it takes about an album, a year or two to fully appreciate what we've done. Mm. Sort of like you can't see the forest through the trees. I'm very much in the trees in the whole way through the process. So, you know, I've done a few interviews with people and they said, oh, I would say that it's your most aggressive album, more aggressive than the last album, Misery Season. And I sort of stopped and think to myself, like, yeah, I didn't really consider that, but yeah, it probably is, you know, it is probably more aggressive. It's more of a, if Misery Season was an album based on, you know, if the general vibe, obviously it's aggressive, but it's, you know, and it's groovy and it's got the industrial overtones and such. And it's, but that's a dark, depressing album. Whereas this one's still dark and depressing, but more aggressive. It's more based out of frustration than, you know, depression sort of thing. Mm. Although they're all sort of hand in hand, but it's a different edge to it. But yeah, it's weird to me.
It's one of those things because it's like something you would have lived and breathed for months. Yeah. You can't disconnect yourself so quickly.
Yeah, exactly. So years. It's taken us years to write and record and put out that album. You know, the recording was done like not last year, but the year before. Fact. And then it was just getting mixed and mastered. And then once it was mixed and mastered, that was finished early last year. And then the business side of everything, just getting everything in order, just took forever. You know, just you have setbacks along the way. So the album's just there. You know, it's ready to go.
Oh fuck! And a lot of bands
describe this. It's like a Devil Driver with their last album. You know, that double release. You know, dealing with Demons Volumes 1 and 2.
Oh yeah.
They recorded those at the same time and handed them into the record label at the same time. And it was like a year or two before the first one came out and then another 2 years before the next one came out. So, I mean, you know, the album was done 4 years ago by the time the whole thing's released, you know.
Good Lord.
And like, so it's a common thing to have just the business side of things take that long. And it did, and you know, it came out, and now here we are. So hopefully people like it, but we did our best.
Welcome. And for those, I guess, outside the music industry, you know, there's a lot of hurdles to be clearing, like this one that you just mentioned. So yeah, it's not like you can just write, record a record and then pump it out next week, unless,
well, I mean, you can.
You can, but
but like, you know, whether it's you know, I mean,
independent, it's a bit different. So
Yeah, I mean, independently, yeah, you can. And like a lot of people do. I know people that, maybe not albums, but they'll record singles and like, or EP, release them, because everyone's got a bedroom studio these days. So, you know, people can pump out things really quickly. But I mean, you know, there's an argument to be saying that, you know, these days with social media, people want content constantly.
Mm.
So whether you pump out songs constantly and give people that content, I don't know if it's necessarily a good thing. Apparently it is. But I mean, does that lessen the effect? If you're constantly popping out songs and people, there's no expectation, people are just constantly bombarded with new stuff. But is that a good thing? I don't know. I don't know the way to do it these days. Like, you know, there's no, I don't think there is a right
I don't think there is any way to do it.
Yeah. everyone does it differently, and like I see people pump out pretty regular songs. Like every couple of months they'll drop an EP, you know, and that seems to do really well for them, and that's good for their fan base. And then there are bands that, like, you know, 5 to 10 years for an album, do you know what I mean? And but it still does well for them. So, you know, I think it's different for everyone, and everyone's got to work out their own way of functioning in this new and constantly ever changing music industry.
Yeah, and that's a big thing to take on board for, well, anyone, I guess, who's coming into the industry or thinking about it. So,
yeah, definitely.
Got to take this on board. So I guess we've discussed these three albums now, and we will have to make a difficult decision now in regards to what we're going to be doing with these three records. What are your thoughts?
Okay. So, okay. Yeah, it's really hard.
We'll probably have to pause for like the next 5 minutes thinking about it.
Okay. We'll go in order of Live, Listen, Erased, and I'll explain what I'm thinking.
Sure.
So Live, so an album I can only hear live once, but then I can't listen to the album ever again.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, jeez. Okay. I'll say Nail Bomb, point blank.
Ooh.
Because I've never seen Nail Bomb live.
Yeah, okay. I've never seen Nail Bomb live.
And when I say I want Alex Newport, I want Nail Bomb.
Yeah, you want that small club, the legendary bloody yes.
Either or, man.
Either or.
As long as the sound is good, and I want, you know, Max Tavolera, Alex Newport, you know, and they had a bunch of drummers on the Dynamo. Yeah. So, you know, I want Igor Cavalera up there, and, like, you know, whoever else they had drumming as well. I want that experience. That would just be something. And that's just, you know, and it would suck to never listen to that album ever again, but I mean, what an experience you'd have there, you know. So yeah, I'll take Nail Bomb's Point Blank live.
Wow.
And purely for that reason. And it's not particularly because I want to never listen to that album again, obviously, because I do, but because you put a gun to my head, you know, this is what I'm choosing, and that's my reasoning for that.
Yep.
Listen to, it's got to be Fear Factory's Obsolete.
I figured this
because I think it's the most complete out of all the albums. It's got bits of everything. It's got groovy songs, it's got fast songs, it's got the industrial metal, it's got clean singing, it's got harsh vocals, it's got bits of everything. So I think I'd be satisfied with that, because there are softer, sadder songs on there as well. You know, you got Timelessness and such, you know, so there's a bit of variation. It's not all intense all the time.
Yeah.
You know, and you can argue that both those other albums have those sort of moments too. Not so much Nail Bomb, that's pretty but yeah, so I would listen to that because it's got the most variation. And like I said, again, all these albums influence me heavily, so this was not an easy decision to make. So obviously that then leaves Erased, and I'd, like, you know, probably going to get a lot of shit for this, but title. Like I was saying to you before we started recording, though, it's like, if it never existed, though, then, like, how different would I be, and how different would, you know, All This Filth be? Would they even be in All This Filth? Like that, you're like, whoa. Would I even be into metal? If I'd never heard Slipknot, would I have, you know, got into a couple of bands and then just gone, yeah, music's not really for me, and then gone off and done something else with my life?
It's like
maybe.
It's like a Hot Tub Time Machine episode or something. I mean, movie.
Exactly. We'll never know, and it's a fantastic album. But of those bands, I would, like, say that. And it's hard because Slipknot is still around. I mean, Fear Factory is still around too as well, you know, technically, depending on your view.
Well, technically with Slipknot too.
Yeah, I mean, no, that's what I was saying. Slipknot, yeah, yeah. I know what you mean. But yeah, I mean, out of those bands, you know, obviously Nail Bomb, you know, they just did the one thing.
Yeah.
They hit it and quit it. So, like, it's hard because it's, like, there, and it's always going to be there, and there's never going to be an up or a down for them because it's that's it.
Yeah, that's
which
all.
Which is cool, which is great, right? And that's all they wanted to do, so that's awesome. But the other bands, because they can constantly still release things, you know, there's going to be a drop here and there. And it's not so much that it's a bad album that they've released. It's just something that I don't connect with as much as I connected with the earlier stuff or whatever. And, you know, there are bands out there that, like, you know, for me, they drop and then they come back and they drop and they come back. And then that's not to say that they're, again, bad albums. It's just I haven't connected with that album. Machine Head, for me, is one of those bands where it goes up and down. I've always thought they're solid albums, but, like, I think their last album they released of Kingdom and Crown, I think was fantastic. You know, it was a good return to form. Mm. But that's just my opinion, you know. And, you know, I still love, you know, Through the Ashes of Empires and, you know, Burn My Eyes and all that sort of stuff as well. Oh, so
come on, The Blackening, that's where it's at though, eh?
Oh, okay. But funnily enough, I liked The Blackening, but I didn't love it like everybody else. Like, I was all about Through the Ashes of Empires, man. Wow. I was just like, I thought that The Blackening was just an extended version of Through the Ashes of Empires. I thought the longest song. Don't get me wrong, I love The Blackening. I've got to be covering lots of hate here. It's like,
calm down, comment section. Calm down. He's explaining it.
easy. I don't hate Slipknot. I don't hate The Blackening. You know, it was voted, I think, The Blackening Metal in Metal Hammer's. Like the most influential album of that decade, I think it was.
And
I get that, and I love The Blackening, but I prefer
Ashes Through Empires or whatever. Empires.
Just for whatever reason, I think it was a little bit more honest. There was a little bit more. They were going through some changes. They were going, and they thought that might be their last ever album. So it's a bit more, not so much desperation, but there was just an edge to it that I think they were, the Blackening didn't have. I mean, don't get me wrong, they played out of their minds on The Blackening, and it was a great album, but they started, some of the songs I was like, I don't know if that needed to be 8 minutes long, do you know what I mean?
Like Farewell to Arms.
Oh, no, don't get me wrong. Actually, I think Farewell to Arms makes sense because that, but there were some other songs on there.
Oh, is it Clenching of the Fist?
Maybe.
It's like a 10-minute track or something, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Mind you, the latest album, the first song.
Oh, yeah, they're all long tracks as well, actually.
Yeah, 10 minutes. They played that live, actually, when I saw them 4 weeks ago. What's the first track off the new album called? I don't remember the top of my head.
No, me neither.
There's something. Slaughter the Martyr.
Slaughter the Martyr. Yeah. Slaughter the Martyr. Yeah.
Great song. Great. But either way, The Blackening, it's a great album, . But anyways, back to Slipknot. We're erasing it from history because mostly just because I had to choose an album basically, and that's the one that got left over. I mean, I hold Nailbomb and Fear Factory in higher regard than Slipknot these days, and so but again,
it's a hard choice as well, though.
Yeah, huge influence on me and many people. Great band, Slipknot, were and are a great band, and I'm interested to see what they do next with obviously, hopefully, they'll have a new drummer. Some people say Eloy from Sepultura,
yeah, that's gonna be intriguing.
That'll be interesting. Maybe it is. He'd be a good fit. But that's the one I would erase purely because I had to make the choice of the three albums. And those are my reasonings. So, that's what I've got to say. About you? What would you do?
I guess my erase is kind of made easy because it would be Nailbomb, and that's purely because it's New Kid on the Block territory.
Yep.
You know, if I had listened to that thing probably 20 years ago, the same time as Slipknot and Fear Factory, then I would dare say this would be a much, much harder choice for me.
Yeah.
But, look, Nailbomb would get erased because, obviously, I hold a much higher connection to the other two albums. But easily, I would listen to Slipknot and their self-titled album because that's like that record that got me into metal. It's an album that I'll jump back to often. And I understand what you're saying, like, you know, with Obsolete, it's cool because there's a lot of versatility within that record. There's a lot of changes, which, you know, for a Slipknot came in later, such as on, I think, Volume 3, when they started to do acoustic tracks and other stuff. Like, yeah, the self-titled record is raw power, young aggression, and that is great. And it shows a young band that is just thirsty to record.
Yeah, yeah.
And for that reason, as well as being a massive record for my childhood, I couldn't stop listening to that album. So it would leave, obviously, Fear Factory's obsolete to be listened to, to go see live. Yeah. And would be a really cool record to go see for that lineup, that era of the band, and what a record to see live as well.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, there's not a bad choice here, really, no matter what you...
No.
Like I said, the only bad choice is whatever's getting erased.
Yes.
Getting erased is a massive loss to metal history and a lot of people's childhoods and influences and such. Because again, yeah, Slipknot was my teen years. You know, that was my jam. And still, like I said, still is. I love that album. I love Iowa. You know, and they, yeah, just great. It's a great band. And like I said, if you erased it from history, where would we be today? Just not just me, but metal in general, where would we be? Like, because without that album, Slipknot doesn't do Iowa either.
I know a lot of people also just like give Slipknot a lot of flack or whatever, but bro, do you know how many people have been brought into the metal community because of Slipknot?
Like, oh, exactly. Yeah. I actually think that, okay, so like, technically speaking, metal was never more popular than during the new metal era, because that was the peak of record sales.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just technically speaking, 2002 CD sales peaked in 2002, music sales in general. So that was just that era. But also because like a lot of the new metal did have a little bit of commercial appeal. There are people that say listen to some new metal bands that don't really listen to metal, the sort of people that you see on that doco, that Woodstock 99 sort of stuff, like, right? So there are people that listen to Korn and Limp Bizkit that don't really get into metal.
Yeah.
But Slipknot was that bridge, right? So like Slipknot was probably, if you class them as a new metal band, and some people do, was probably the heaviest new metal band probably of all time. They took like some elements of new metal and brought more like heavy and aggression into that, which then made it sort of more accessible for people that would maybe go to those sort of concerts and, you know, maybe not get into the heavier elements of metal, to sort of start exploring that. So like you said, in a way, like, you know, they say that, you know, new metal... Some people will argue new metal killed metal, but it didn't.
No.
And some people say new metal saved metal because it was waning in the 90s and the noughties and such. But either way you look at it, I think new metal obviously was a time, and it did generate a lot of new fans for metal. And Slipknot was a massive part of getting a lot of those sort of casual listeners into, you know, onto the dark side, you know. And so, yeah, huge, massive.
Oh, yeah.
And like, you know, what sort of a band has it, you know, they're still massive to this day. They have their own festival.
Yeah, right? Knotfest or something with Pantera. I mean, that would be probably one of their influences, but Pantera is reunited.
So, you know, how many bands, let alone metal bands, can say they have their own festival? You look at Metallica. Metallica can do what they want, because they're huge, and everybody knows Metallica. You know, they're like AC/DC. They're synonymous worldwide with just music in general.
Mm.
But and Slipknot are sort of, you know, in that. Like there's not too many metal bands coming out now that are ever going to be as big as Slipknot, just with the way the music industry is, you know? Like people say, oh, what about Lamb of God? I'm like, yeah, Lamb of God are massive, but they're not Slipknot massive, like, you know?
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's two different leagues, especially in regards to Lamb of God. And Lamb of God is like one of those weird... That's one of those bands that I transition from Slipknot to. You listen to Slipknot, then you go, oh, yeah, who's this Lamb of God fella? Yeah. And damn, that is... you know, when you go into people, you know, back to, I guess, the point earlier on in the episode, we're talking about, oh, Slipknot's the heaviest thing you ever hear. But then you listen to Lamb of God and you're going, oh, what the bloody hell is this?
Actually, they were another massive influence on me in the early days, you know, as the Palaces Burns and Ashes of the Wake.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
huge for me growing up. And again, Chimera as well. I actually got into Lamb of God through Chimera.
Oh, right.
I got into Chimera mostly because I bought their Pass Out of Existence album. Just because, you know, back in the day, you could go to the CD store and you could flick through the metal section and basically you just go, oh, Roadrunner Records. And I'd be like, I'll give it a go.
Yeah.
Why the hell not?
Yeah.
And I literally picked up the Chimera album, Pass Out of Existence, saw all the mechanical shit in the blue cover and thought, that looks cool. Roadrunner Records. It's payday. I'm going to go give it a go. So I gave it a go and I was like, this band is awesome. Like, again, a bit of an industrial element and such.
Yeah, so Chimera is a band that I really haven't listened to in quite a long time, to be honest. And I've got to go back, now you're bringing this up, and listen to them and just see, I guess, the connection between them and Lamb of God, because I can't quite recall it off the top of my head. But obviously, you know, that's how you got into Lamb of God and, you know, some other music like that, through Roadrunner Records. I guess that was the connection, wasn't it? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, I went, again, it's back when you could literally, you know, Roadrunner Records was such an influential record label in metal. Like, you'd go to the record store, you'd look at Roadrunner Records, and you'd just be like, cool. And I just gave Chimera a go through that, you know, got their album Pass Out of Existence. I liked the cover, got into it, and I had that groove metal, industrial metal sort of, like, overtones going on, and I was like, yes. This is my jam, you know, because I was big in Fear Factory and Slipknot by that stage and such. So I got into them, and then through them, I saw they were touring, and Lamb of God was actually opening for Chimera back then. And so through that, I was like, oh, who's this Lamb of God? I checked out Lamb of God, and the album, they hadn't released Ashes of the Wake yet. They just, the ads, the palaces burned, they literally were just about to. It was about 2003-ish.
Yeah, okay.
And then they released Ashes of the Wake and the rest is history. But yeah, I got into Lamb of God through Chimera.
Interesting. I mean, and you know, we could probably circle around a lot, especially around that record label in particular, for quite a big opening in the metal community. That was a big, Roadrunner is a big influence as far as, I guess, the early 2000s and metal community.
Yeah.
And influencing probably a lot of minds like ourselves. So, you know, I guess thank you, Roadrunner, for bringing all this filth to my attention in a roundabout way.
They definitely, that label, definitely a lot of the band, well, not so much the label, but the bands on the label.
Yeah, the bands on them.
In a big way. I mean, this whole discussion's just been about bands that have influenced me. So,
But that's half the fun of this one, these episodes anyway, you know. So I think that perfectly sums up a very difficult list that I've given you as well. We've covered the bands on here in depth and discussed many aspects as well outside of it. But this has been a fun chat. This has been really cool to talk over these three albums, two of which I'm pretty damn familiar with, in particular Slipknot. You know, I don't get to talk about this type of music often with some of the other people that I bring on my channel. So, always love talking about this stuff whenever I can. So, Brendan, I guess, thank you for coming on the channel and being a willing participant of such a difficult list to be discussing.
Oh, well, no, thank you for having me. It's been a great chat. I love talking about music in general and, like, you know, this style of music, metal. It's like, it's what I do. It's what I live for. So, yeah, love talking about it. I'll come back anytime. We'll do another three albums.
That's it. Perfect. And we'll do long episodes as always, because I'm guessing new people who have stuck around to this point love watching us chat about such things. So, everyone, if you haven't checked out Brendan's band, that's All This Filth. Go check them out. The album is out now. Tomorrow Will Be Better. Check it out, because holy shit, was I impressed when I heard that. So, everyone, thank you very much, Brendan, again, for coming on. And I guess this has been a really good episode to finish up on this one here, so.
Cheers for having me, Chili. It's been great. Like I said, let's do it again sometime.
Hell yeah. Keen. Everyone, you have a great day and stay spicy. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Live Listen Erased. And if you have enjoyed this episode, make sure you share it with all your friends. Don't forget to subscribe to our Chili Con Carnage crew so you can get notified for all the future videos that we put out, as we put out videos every Friday. Also, we are on Discord, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter over at Live Listener Race, so make sure to tune in over there. And don't forget to like this video so that our manager can stay very happy.